Good afternoon.
Did you Adam, just give up, Adam? Again.
Oh, sorry, guys. I'm texting, don't mind.
Feel free to join.
I totally missed it.
He realized he was late, and for a second he considered joining, and then he just said, fuck it.
No.
I missed it. He's like, I'm good.
By the way, the Adam Hall story. Right there.
Yeah, yeah. I knew I was late, and then I was like, fuck it.
Had the best of intentions. Yeah, I'm definitely going to do that thing. Fuck it. Every day.
It's about right.
Every day of this man's life.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. And yet I still win these games on this podcast.
Yeah,
I don't know
do.
How I keep getting away with it.
You do.
Yeah.
Oh, we were supposed to do a draft today.
Yeah, I know. I was going to mention that, but I just said, fuck it. I'm not going to mention it.
Oh, man.
You're the worst person. The worst kind of person. Anyway, this is Why Is This a Thing? This is a show that we do by the skin of our teeth somehow. I don't know how we've continued to do it for 6 years, but we're still going half-heartedly strong.
Also, by the way, it's one of those great shows where I have food.
This dude literally pulled out a 10-piece McNugget, mm-hmm. set it down on the table 20 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And didn't touch a single nugget until we started recording so he can chew into the microphone.
Yep.
Can we just fire him right now? Like, what's happening here, Nick?
Oh, I also have Twinkies. Would you like a Twinkie, Nico?
What do you have Twinkies for? Do they still make those?
It's yes.
It was news to me, too.
Look at that.
Those
Hostess.
Are outlawed.
It's legitimate. Yeah, it was outlawed.
After the
it's
Geneva
communist
convention.
Food is what it is.
No, these are the Twinkies that have lasted since the Geneva Convention.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't know if you heard. They last forever.
I've already made a fortune. I've been selling them for like $5,000 on eBay. And
what
I've been
the
making my money.
Date on these?
I have no idea.
Does it have one? Mm. June 23rd, 2021. I don't buy it.
Mm-mm.
No, I don't buy it.
Nope.
Yeah, I would hoard those things up, man.
And just, sell them?
And yeah, because someone's going to drop a bag for them in 20 years. For
like Woody Harrelson or something? Well, inside reference, by the way.
He likes snowballs.
No, he hates snowballs. He doesn't like...
Stop talking with food in your mouth!
What?
What are we doing here? This is not acceptable on a night out. To like a restaurant, never mind a recorded podcast for literally hundreds of listeners.
What is that sound even?
Dozens of listeners are watching this and are listening to this in horror.
Dozens.
What, you don't like the ASMR of me going like,
no, I barely maybe. Like your regular voice.
Dozens, Adam, maybe even scores. Maybe even scores.
Some might say four scores. Hey guys. So, it's zombie week here on Too Many Thoughts Media.
I guess it is. For no particular reason.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure how this happened, but there's a movie called Army of the Dead that was just released on Netflix. It's directed by Zack Snyder, so Adam had the idea of doing a zombie movie podcast on the Movie Hall of Fame, and when we mentioned that we were doing that, Nick was like, let's do a zombie movie here. So now it's zombie week. Serendipity. Yep. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of how it happens.
Synergy, baby.
I've watched the first 10 minutes of Army of the Dead, and I guess I'll finish it tonight.
What are your
instant Is that how you watch movies? You go 10 minutes and then
well,
the
if
next
it's directed
hour
by,
40?
If it's directed by Zack Snyder, you better believe it.
Yeah.
When these movies are as long as they are. This is a zombie film, and it is almost 2.5 hours long.
Oh, my Jesus Christ.
So can you blame me?
It's 2.5
yeah.
hours?
Like, God, I saw that runtime. I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
I would just like, in the future, when Zack Snyder releases a movie, not to have to, like, pack an overnight bag and, like, supplies to last me for the long winter. Because that's what it's turned into every time a Zack Snyder movie
comes out. It's one thing when Scorsese makes a long movie. It's like, yeah, it's long, but it's Scorsese. It's fine. Like, you're Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
You suck at making movies.
His films
How dare you take up that much time?
His films last the length of a zombie apocalypse nowadays.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy. But no, the crazy thing, and I guess we'll talk about it when we actually do our zombie pod, but there are some reviews out there that say it's his best film since Dawn of the Dead, which is about the saddest thing I've ever heard, because Dawn of the Dead is his first film.
Right.
And he's...
And it's, like, pretty good, right?
Yeah. Oh, I actually like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's a solid movie. It's not a great movie, but it is what it is, and it works on that level. But he's dug himself into, like, the superhero image for, like, basically ever since... Dawn of the Dead, because even if it wasn't superheroes, it was comic book movies, because that's what 300 was.
Yeah, he got that job like pretty early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he started doing the comic book thing. Yeah, immediately, right? 300 was his second movie?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then it's Watchmen, and then it's the whole Justice League thing.
They do Sucker Punch too.
Sucker Punch is the
same
Sucker Punch
style. Was a,
sure. And then the Owls of Ga'Hoole. The
I never
what
saw
was that? Rise of the Guardians? Rise of the Legend Guardians. Of the Guardians, something like that.
I read that as a kid, the whole series.
Yeah. It is kind of strange. We flirted with the idea that Zack Snyder is good for about 2 months, and that's over. That is like the shortest lived narrative like I've ever seen. Like we played around with it, kind of like how you maybe experiment with the other genders in college, but then immediately you're like, I'm going right back, man. Zack Snyder sucks. I'm not speaking from personal experience here. I'm just saying that someone might do that.
Nick and I had that moment where we just turn away and look at each other like,
because Adam and I had a phase in college where we made out a few times.
We flirted a few times.
Yeah.
Many sensuous nights together with Nick Evangelista.
With Judge Dredd on in the
with
background.
With Judge Dredd in the background. Oh my God, you have no idea, Nico. No idea.
You've never really lived.
I am the law.
Oh, I am the law.
Until something like that happens to you. But yeah, no, Zack Snyder immediately bad again. We're back to Zack Snyder.
I heard Army of the Dead was like good though.
Did the first 10 minutes mean anything to you?
It was fun. The first 10 minutes were fine.
Okay.
They were fun.
Because I heard there is a moment, spoiler alert, in this movie where Zack Snyder literally drops the song Zombie by the Cranberries into the soundtrack of the movie.
Well, I mean, the movie's silly, so there's that. It's very obvious and somewhat self-referential.
If that ain't fucking Zack Snyder core, I don't know what is.
Well, the movie takes place in Las Vegas, and it begins with a cover of Viva Las Vegas by Richard Cheese.
I can't do this.
Richard Cheese, the guy who does the cover of Down with the Sickness.
It's like Last Christmas.
Yes.
It's like that movie. We're going to take a song and take it as literally as possible and just insert it in the film. We're in Vegas. All right. Play the Vegas music. Oh, it's there like, are zombies. Play zombie.
It's like hyper fucking. It's like really fucking violent. Like I was like the first 10 minutes, I'm already shocked by how violent it is. Like there's this moment where a zombie just gets eviscerated by a 50 caliber machine gun. And he's just like popping all over the place, like just splurts of red and orange are just flying all over the place. It's really intense. And I was like, oh, OK, but this is like silly as fuck. And
the most obvious thing you've ever seen, right?
We'll
see. I don't want to pass judgment on the movie, but like Zack Snyder has not always been one for subtext.
No, well,
you know,
hey, plenty of subtext with, you know, Jesus and Man of Steel and BVS. That's some deep shit, right?
I've heard exactly halfway through the film he plays The Middle by Jimmy Eat World. Just so people can know where they are in the movie, you know.
42 minutes into the movie, there's this inexplicable reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as well.
They play the dolphin song.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just all of a sudden dolphins start floating away. It's really bizarre. Doesn't make much sense, but
yeah, I can't do it. I'll try. I will try my damnedest tonight. But Jesus, dude.
You're gonna be pretty out of it the when you're in the credits. And you see that Zack Snyder also did the cinematography for the movie.
Oh, goodness.
And it's interesting. I'm not loving it, but
I saw some stills online and they look, it look, you know how that new effect that you can do on iPhones where they blur
effect?
Out the background?
The portrait effect.
Right. Yeah. The portrait effect. And Zoom does the same thing too, where like there were shots that I saw on Twitter that look exactly like that.
Yes, it's very like soft, strangely, and it's a zombie movie.
God, I can't do this.
I hear it's fun. I don't know. I hear it's fun.
I like the idea of a heist movie set in like the zombie universe.
In Las Vegas.
Vegas, that's cool.
It's Ocean's 11 with zombies.
Cool.
So, yeah.
I've had it with this guy.
You've had it.
I gave him one movie.
You gave him 4 hours.
I gave him 4 hours of my time, and I complimented him, and now our relationship is done, man. He's given me all that he can give me.
Real quick, just want to say one last thing about Zack Snyder. 300's overrated. That movie fucking blows, and I'm sick of everybody acting like it's a great movie. It fucking sucks.
Thank you.
Sorry. Okay, just wanted to get that out there.
I was just eating a chicken nugget. Yeah, it's fine.
No, it's bad.
That's all I have to offer. No, it's fine. I don't hate it. Are there people who love it? I don't know a lot of people love.
Yes, really? There are people who love that movie.
It's not a great movie at all.
It's a bad movie.
Yeah. I've seen worse.
In middle school, there were a lot of people that loved it.
I agree with that.
That was a hot movie when we were kids. When did that come out? Like 2007, 2008?
It just looks so fake. Like every bit of it. I hate it. That's all of his movies, though. They just look fake. They don't look right.
Yeah, that is the problem.
Not Dawn of the Dead.
I get it. Maybe I'll watch Dawn of the Dead this week, too. All right. Anyway, this is actually a good segue into what we're talking about today, because we watched a movie directed by Jim Jarmusch called The Dead Don't Die.
Yes.
Which came out just 2 years ago. We thought it was the most sort of offbeat, quirky us zombie movie.
You're going to have to explain to me where this movie came from, who this guy is. I don't understand how this flew under my radar completely, but I am just lost.
Jim Jarmusch?
Okay. All of this, yes. What is my, I mean, what?
What? The question here is what?
How did Bill Murray, Steve Buscemi, Adam Driver, Selena Gomez slip under my radar in 2019?
Iggy Pop.
Yeah, what's going on
Tom
here?
Tom Waits.
Like, I will.
RZA.
I will say this. I must say this. Is that, like, I got into this not sure if this was going to work for the pod. I mean, the idea of Jim Jarmusch doing a zombie film is intriguing enough as it is, obviously, because it's actually my first Jim Jarmusch film that I've ever seen, which is kind of amazing to Nico, apparently.
I've only seen two of them myself before this one. But I really, like, adore both of them. So I was looking forward to this, definitely.
But I know who he is, and I know the kinds of films he makes,
right?
Like pretty acutely. So hearing that he was doing this was sort of fascinating to me. So, yeah. I will say this, is that certainly while I was watching this, I was like, no, this is definitely in our wheelhouse for a lot of interesting reasons. And I guess my barometer is that there comes a point where I'm like, what is this? What the hell am I watching?
Well, it's kind of barely a movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is, okay, I'll tell you my backstory here. I've seen Patterson and I've seen Broken Flowers. One of them stars Adam Driver. The other one stars Bill Murray. Jim Jarmusch knows how to get really good performances out of both of these guys. They're both wonderful in those movies. Mm-hmm. Patterson is like a transcendent experience. I would highly recommend everybody see Patterson. It is so fucking good. Jim Jarmusch is one of the pioneers of the American independent movement. You know, I would say one of the three or four most important figures, with like John Cassavetes, Steven Soderbergh, I mean, even John Waters to a certain extent. Roger Corman, Dennis Hopper. Jarmusch is one of those guys, though, in the early 1980s that made movies on strictly shoestring budgets and sort of gained a cult following. Mystery Train is a big movie of his. Only Lovers Left Alive was a movie he did a couple years ago with Tilda Swinton. Was a vampire movie, actually.
Oh, interesting. Dead Man Walking, I think. Is that his first film with Johnny Depp? What's
that
called, I think?
No. It was, the first thing he did was Coffee and Cigarettes.
Oh.
Which was a series of short films that he eventually turned into an anthology movie in the early 2000s. Stranger Than Paradise is his debut.
Oh God, that's
his feature
right.
debut. Right. Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai, which I need to get around to as well. I need to get around to a lot of these. But the guy's definitely like my style. He's in my wheelhouse, and he mostly makes like very quirky, small, sometimes somber character studies. Mm-hmm. Not always somber, but sometimes somber, with like a very interesting sense of humor. I was on the internet April 1st, 2019, which is April Fool's Day, as it is every year.
I see where this is going.
And I saw the trailer for this movie because it was released on April Fool's Day. And I think it was on the IMDb Facebook page or something. And I watched the video and I thought, oh, this is a fun April Fool's Day sketch. Mm-hmm. This is really cool. They got all these people together, and oh, isn't it so funny that they're saying Jim Jarmusch directed it? Like, what? Like, that's like the perfect joke. It's like, because the last screen is directed by Jim Jarmusch, so like that's like a cool button at the end of an SNL sketch. You know what I mean? That like an independent film cult icon is making a zombie movie starring all of these people. And so I just watched the video and I thought, oh, that's cool. Adam Driver saying ghouls.
I think we're dealing with zombies, you know, undead. Ghouls.
Like, hot, good on IMDb for putting this thing together. And then 5 days goes by and I see another article on the internet or I see a trailer on, on TV and it's like, oh, this is a real movie.
Yeah.
Like, I went 5 whole days being like, this is just a sketch that's a one off. But they made a whole movie to this trailer, apparently. There are more
They made
shots.
It to the trailer. No, they were making the movie. Yeah, this was not a joke.
I think the sketch was so successful that they decided to make the film.
They just reshot those scenes perfectly.
So it's very fucking bizarre. Is this a Jim Jarmusch movie?
Is this a movie?
Is this a movie?
That's the bigger fucking thing. It doesn't really feel like one, does it?
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that you said coffee and cigarettes was like a series of vignettes that he put together. This movie, what I was going to describe it as is it feels like a series of vignettes that are loosely strung together with the backdrop of zombies.
Mm.
It feels like a bunch of sketches, SNL makes a movie. I don't know. It's just a bunch of sketches put together. It doesn't make any sense. There's no cohesion to this at all.
With ludicrously famous people.
Yeah. Right.
What'd you think of it though? Danny Glover's also with
I should mention
that too.
Caleb, what the hell's that guy's
name? So many people.
That guy from fucking, he's in Three Billboards and Get Out
and Twin Peaks.
That's right, he is in Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
did you mention Tom Waits?
Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah,
Tilda fucking Swinton's in this too. Tilda Swinton,
we'll talk about her. I enjoyed it. There's two questions here. Did you like the movie? I'd say yeah. Strangely, do I think it's a good movie? I don't know. I have no idea. I still need to process this one, I think. I will say there was a lot of uncanny things going on with the script here that made me feel very weird about myself, I must say.
Yeah. Like, again, Jarmusch, from the little experience I've had with him, is usually much more earnest of a filmmaker than this. This is a very self-referential, winky movie. There are specific meta references to Jim Jarmusch, the director, to the script, to the motifs, to the musical motifs, to the, you know, the foreshadowing. It kind of gave me like Quentin Depew vibes.
Occasionally.
Mm-hmm. You know, just like in the style, how sort of slow and wry it was in its commentary.
It's a little better looking. It's actually a fairly well shot film. I was okay with that.
I mean, for what it is, I mean, not like a well shot horror movie, but like a well shot like indie in a small town.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think if you were going to compare this to like a Quentin Depew movie, again, I would say that like Depew does it better.
Well, okay, that is what I was sort of getting at here, is I'm not sure this works as a zombie movie.
No, it doesn't.
Like, I'm not sure it works as a genre exercise, where Quentin Depew movies, like, for example, Rubber is like a send-up to slasher horror, but also kind of works as a slasher horror movie, and is also, like, really funny.
Yeah.
This is more like an interesting movie to think about, whereas the experience watching it I thought was kind of sluggish, to be honest with you.
It's very sluggish.
Yeah.
And very padded out.
Kind of moves like a zombie.
Oh, I had this funny experience that I was watching it this morning, and I get to a point where I feel like it must be like 45 minutes into the movie, and it was only 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Which speaks to the pace of the film, and obviously. It's also surprising how few zombies there actually are in the movie. It takes a while to get going.
Right.
28 minutes before the first zombie arrives.
Yep. And I don't think the vision is totally figured out, which was a little frustrating, I guess. It just made for a weird experience. I didn't hate the movie, though, whenever it got so inconsistent and there was so much dissonance with what was going on. The biggest thing for me is just the sense of humor, which I had a difficult time pinning down. I'd like to mention, by the way, that Jim Jarmusch stole a scene from me. I released a short film in 2016, and I guess he copied a specific scene from my short film.
Which scene was that?
There's a scene in this movie where Bill Murray's getting very frustrated in a cop car. He's like, "Why is this happening?" And then Adam Driver's response is, "Well, you really want to know?" "Yes, I want to know." Well, I read the script. Yeah, Jim gave me the whole script. Jim didn't give me the whole script. That fucking dick. Yeah, you know.
I think that's word for word. Exposition for a murder, isn't it?
Kind of what happens in a scene in Exposition for a Murder. I think Jim got on YouTube.
Watched a short film perusing with less than 600 views.
Some little indie film, you know, because that's where he goes for inspiration, I guess.
Right. I mean, you guys really, you travel in the same circles. Yeah, we do.
It was literally the exact same.
Right. And I'll be honest. So I mean, that's not my fucking thing. It's just not my vibe. I don't generally like that sense of humor. Now, I do like meta stuff.
There was one time in the movie where it worked for me. So basically, throughout the entire film, Adam Driver is predicting what is going to happen.
Yeah.
And he just knows what's happening next.
Yes.
It never worked throughout the entire film, except for one time when they first find the dead bodies after the zombies.
Yes.
And Bill Murray goes, "So what do you think?" And he goes, "You want my honest opinion? It's zombies." Like, that worked. That was funny.
Yes. Yeah.
It got me. But, like, you know, at the beginning when they're noticing, oh, this song sounds familiar. Well, it's the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, are we really going to have this kind of movie?
Yeah.
Is this what we're doing?
Yeah.
I felt the same way.
I felt the exact same. And I just felt like Jarmusch was above it. Now, again, I haven't seen his entire filmography. I don't know if he's ever, like, played around in this sandbox before. And again, like, Charlie Kaufman stuff is incredibly meta. But I respond to that because it feels of a piece with the universe that he's built.
Well, you just beat me to it. I was going to say, like, those movies, that meta stuff is interwoven into the fabric of the narrative.
Right.
In a way where, like, every scene seems to have it in some form, even if it doesn't pop out immediately.
Correct.
Whereas, like, the meta-ness of this movie is about the most random thing I've ever seen.
Right.
It's funny, we were just talking about Quentin Depew. Those movies could not be more random.
Yes.
But similarly, the randomness makes sense in that world, as strange as that is to say.
Mm.
You know, like even just the guy taking a shit and wrong, like, I got it immediately. And the movie pays off with more and more scenes like that. It's not just the random, we're in a movie, guys. Okay, let's go back to killing zombies. It's like, whoa, what?
Right.
Very bizarre.
And it didn't really need that. Like, this is, you know, I think a very political movie. It has a lot to say about, like, sort of Americans' indifference towards chaos. Which I think you can communicate without putting a character in the movie that literally lays out the plot on a scene for scene basis. Like, it just felt cheap. It just felt like a cheap trick.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of felt heavy handed at times.
At times.
Which, specifically the ending of the movie. And this is the sort of broader conversation that I want to have about zombie movies, and maybe we'll have it on the podcast later this week. But zombie movies, since George Romero invented the genre, have, you know, more or less been political allegories, right? Like,
I would say social allegories.
Okay.
And I know we split hairs on what that is. But,
sure.
But, like, George Romero is, to me, never been as interested with the political side of things as he is in just the people side of things.
Okay.
And
tomato, tomato, but I see what you mean.
Yeah, but, like, the ideas are broader than just politics is what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And until people say, hey, there's social commentary in your movies, and he's like, wait, there is?
Right.
Okay, and then he makes Land of the Dead, and it's okay. but the biggest problem with that movie is that it's so heavy-handed. And a lot of the reasons why movies like Martin work, or his his Dead trilogy works so well, is that a lot of that stuff is much more subtle and sort of boiling beneath the surface through just the anxieties of the characters.
Precisely right. And that is sort of the brilliant thing about zombie films, and why they have endured for half of a century, is because they're entertaining on their surface.
Yes.
Like, they're just, if you take it as a movie about dead people eating brains,
they're fun.
They're fun, and they work, and the social commentary is there if you're looking for it. But you don't need it to enjoy it.
No. Nope.
Right? You know, 28 Days Later is another example of that. Like, there are dozens and dozens of socially aware horror movies, zombie movies, that don't beat you over the head with their premise. But again, the fact that the subtext is there should be enough.
Sure.
This is a movie that the subtext is the whole movie. And
I know,
if you're not picking up on what Jim Jarmusch is putting down, you're going to miss the point and you're going to feel like you're missing something throughout watching it. And that's just not the experience that you want your audience to have while in the throes of a horror movie.
How could you, though? He's constantly talking about it.
Sure.
Throughout the entire...
No, I get it. I get
it. There are moments where they're practically looking at the camera and saying, fracking is bad.
Steve Buscemi is wearing a MAGA hat says
he's wearing a MAWA hat.
It's keep America white again.
Make America white again. It's not even
it's keep America white again.
I read make America
white. No, keep
white.
America keep. White again.
It said keep.
It's a keep America white.
What?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so the entire time you're watching these scenes, they clearly have an idea. And they're fun ideas to think about once you've left the theater. But as you're watching it, it's just not particularly cinematic. And it's not a good zombie movie. It's not a good horror movie.
No.
And frankly, not like a great horror comedy either, in the way like Shaun of the Dead is or something.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah. Or for me personally, what Return of the Living Dead is.
Right.
So.
Right. So, yeah, it's a weird one. I do think, again, if you read this script... or you think about the ideas after you've left the theater or after you've watched it, there is some cool stuff. I mean, this is a town literally called Centerville. That is the name of the town that they live in, not only because it's geographically in the center of the country, but also because every resident seems to be in the center, not persuaded by one political side or the other, just allowing the chaos and division of the country to sort of... to seep throughout their entire existence.
What's the point of all that, though? Like, this is my question in a movie like this, where it's like, again, like we've already said, a zombie film can say a bunch of stuff purposely or inadvertently, you know, and that's basically the legacy of Night of the Living Dead, where George Romero was just making a movie that, an idea that scared him, but he wasn't necessarily thinking about the social context. It just kind of came out of that time period and who he was. It's like a pure artistic experience for him. But... like, Jim Jarmusch is clearly trying to do something here. So, and I would assume he takes it seriously, right? I guess. I mean, I it's hard with a guy like this, but let's say he is taking it seriously. The problem with that is that it's at pretty strict odds I don't want to spoil it, but with what happens with Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
When something like that happens, it's like, how can I take this seriously? If you want us to listen to you. Like, dude.
Yeah, that to me was just a troll of, like, people on Reddit saying that Tilda Swinton is an alien. Like, I think that's as far as that joke goes. I don't think there's anything else to it.
Really,
but again,
didn't
the
work.
Fact that it's in the movie. It's just the fact that it's in the movie at all with, like, this very, very clear message that he wants to get across. Like, what's the point of the message when you have stuff like that in the movie?
No, but I'm down for stuff like that. Like, I like when movies do that. I like left turns.
Oh, I like that.
No, I just didn't think it was
particularly
entertaining. I mean, that's just the problem.
Show up. I'm going to spoil it.
Sure.
You like when randomly aliens just show up and one of the characters we've been following just flies away with the aliens.
It's insane.
Well, spoiler alert for the second season of Fargo on FX, but that happens in an episode of Fargo. Yeah. And it works. It really works. Like,
did it work here though?
It didn't, but I really don't think I
feel
think,
like if you have two seasons of a show to like make it work, yeah, maybe it'll work. But here, it's just happens.
Yes, it just happens.
There's no it's literally
like Nico, you're just complaining the other week about the Boris Karloff twist. This is way crazier than that, man.
But here's the thing.
It doesn't make any sense.
I don't think the issues of this movie go beyond it's not entertaining. Like, I just think, like, here's my only studio note. Make the movie better. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I know I'm sounding kind of facile about this. We could go through the specific reasons, but I think, like, I am intrigued by this cast. I am intrigued by Jim Jarmusch doing a genre movie. I am intrigued by the idea of zombies not affecting anyone on screen. Like, it is beating you over the head with a very obvious message, which is it's the living that are actually the zombies, not the dead people, which we've seen a thousand times over in zombie movies. But like, all of these ideas look good on paper. And I think sprinkling in the political stuff is cool. And the wild Tilda Swinton twist, I'm also there for. I was just bored by the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's as far as it goes, man. I just, I really just don't think this works as a movie. I think it works as a sketch released on YouTube for April Fool's Day. And it should have stayed that way. I wish that they just scrapped the movie and pretended it was an April Fool's Day sketch all along.
I can't help but feel like every single amazing person they got in this film was underutilized.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that there's a little bit of, it feels like a very disconnected series of sketches where if we had a little bit more time to dwell in any one of these people, like if I could just follow Steve Buscemi for an hour, or if I could just follow, well, Bill Murray, I think was not bad in this, but like why cast him as like the straight man? It just doesn't work for me.
He's fine in the movie. I wouldn't say he made any impression though.
Right. That's what I mean. Like he, I feel like has a lot more talent and he just wasn't utilized in any interesting way. He was just like the old man.
I will say I love Adam Driver's
Adam Driver's great in this.
He's really good in this movie, and I like
he's great in everything.
But he dominates the screen in this movie primarily. Yeah, he's on the screen the most.
I don't think he was my favorite performance though.
Who's your favorite performance?
I think Chloe Sevigny was my favorite performance.
Oh,
to be honest, she's a character that at least had some meat on the bone. Like she was the only one like acting as if she was in a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, she was the closest thing to like a scream queen.
It's a little
that you get.
Silly though, don't you think? Like the way that she's a cop and she's throwing up at seeing like dead people on the ground.
Well,
like,
okay, I'm sorry, but like she's not a fucking. She's not working for the FBI, Adam. She's a small town cop. She like deals
cops
with.
Cops see some gnarly shit, man.
Centerville, Pennsylvania.
Wherever it was, yeah. Something like that.
Cops have to be shown significantly worse stuff like this when they're in school, man. You have to be shown cases where children have been mutilated and stuff. It's not.
I get the impression this is more akin to like the local sheriff who deals with missing chickens, not.
Right.
Yeah.
Not CSI crime scene.
Okay, but
you know,
the movie
get out
is
the rape kit. Like this is.
No, I get that.
This is like, oh,
get the dark light out,
Bill. You I'm got another traffic it's violation.
I'm just saying it's pretty universal. It's not like she walked down to like the local police station after high school and she's like, I want to be a cop. They're like, okay, here's your fucking uniform.
But that's a common trope though. The small town cop that vomits the first time they experience a murder scene.
Yeah. And I've never liked it.
You know, like Mayor of Easttown, the new HBO show does. There's a cop in that show that is literally afraid of the sight of blood. And so he sees just blood drips on the ground and he like starts throwing up.
But again, like
I don't mind that because it kind of. In a lot of ways, I think it works because TV movies, they tend to glorify, romanticize like what being a cop is. And I think it's a lot more paperwork than people give it credit for. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I kind of don't mind that aspect of it. And I also
I liked that scene. I thought like for the most part, it was one of the better scenes in the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Really? I thought it was a little stupid.
I like that whole scene. I like the bit where every single time somebody sees the bodies, was it an animal or perhaps several animals?
Yeah,
it was funny. It was a silly little bit.
I wasn't laughing that much in the movie is the problem.
Well, here's the thing that Nick kind of hit the nail on the head just now. He asked why was Bill Murray cast as a straight man? The problem is this movie is just full of straight men. Mm-hmm. Like every character is a straight man except for like Chloe Sevigny.
And Adam Driver.
Well, kind of, but not really. I mean, kind of.
Well, the fact that he knows what's going on sort of it gives him this air of otherness.
Yeah,
sure. Comedically, though, he's still monotone. Everybody in the movie is pretty monotone.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Buscemi, I guess, isn't. But
his acting is monotone, but his character is
right.
A joke.
You know what this reminded me of, Nick? The play we directed.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Nick and I directed a play.
Oh.
Senior year of high school. It went
really
horribly.
Bad.
Went horribly wrong. We picked this this play called The Still Alarm.
Mm.
Right? The Still Alarm?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like a very wry British play about a building that is burning down, like a hotel that is burning down, but the alarm doesn't go off. And everybody in the room is acting as though nothing is going wrong.
Like nobody reacts correctly.
Sure.
I like that.
Right. And so they just go about their business as the building is burning down.
And it sounds funny on paper, but in
reality, it's kind of Monty Python-esque. You could see Monty Python doing something like this.
But the problem is the way it comes across on the stage is a bunch of random shit is just happening and there's no logic to it. And it's not cohesive at all.
Right. And no characters are reacting in the way that the audience is supposed to react.
No.
Which is really tough. You can pull it off. If you're really fucking good at comedy, you can pull it off. But if you can't, then it just looks like a tonal disaster, which is essentially what happened here. Like nobody in the audience understands what the tone of the play is supposed to be because none of the characters are telling you what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And this movie kind of felt similar. Chloe Sevigny again is sort of playing it as though she's in a horror movie,
but she's out of place to me. That's yes. the problem. Well,
I think she's meant to be, right? She's the only one who's acting sane.
Yes.
And right. everybody's treating her like she's crazy for acting sane. And I think that's sort of the punchline of that.
Yeah. And this is something that Nick and I figured out after our directorial debut was a fucking disaster at Plainville High School, that we needed a character in there screaming about the building burning down. Mm. Like, we needed a guy shaking the other characters on screen, being like, what the fuck's the matter with you? This building is going to go down and you're like making sure your laundry is folded properly, you know? And we realized that, of course, after the fact, And I feel like if Jim Jarmusch had another shot at this, another bite at the apple, he might have done a similar thing, which is just put one character. And I guess Tom Waits is that character by default, just because he is so far removed from what's happening here. He's the only character that has chosen not to live amongst the chaos. And so he gets the final laugh. But even he's not playing it up enough. And Tom Waits is good in the movie, too. I really like Tom Waits as an actor.
Yeah, me too.
They just treat him like the narrator figure.
He's
though.
The Jim Jarmusch stand-in.
Which sure. doesn't work.
No, not really.
It's, again, I think a waste of the character, which they could have done more with.
Mm. Yeah, you needed an audience avatar here, and you didn't have one. And so that's just a problem for a movie like this that's supposed to be a zom-com.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, I don't know. It's just all very dry to me.
Yeah no, like, I think that is the problem. And again, I really like a lot of the stuff on
I like
paper.
It. No, I like it on paper, too. No,
I was going to say, I like a lot of this in theory.
I don't think the social commentary works at all, though. I mean, and again, even if there was an audience avatar, the social commentary still would have been pretty bad just because of the way it's handled. It could not be more obvious if you tried.
Social commentary is tough.
Yes.
And I'm...
I think it's kind of amateurish in this movie, if I'm being totally
part
honest.
Of me is like what you said earlier. It's like, how do you expect us to take your point seriously when you randomly have aliens come in like that and just like defeat the purpose of your film? Yes. But at the same time, in a show like South Park, ironically, the social commentary works because the entire thing is absurd from start to finish.
I keep going back to this. Like, yes, and you're right. But if the entire thing is that, then we get it.
And this is, maybe it's just the fact that it's inconsistent. I don't know.
It's not an effective zombie movie. That's just the bottom line, man. But it wasn't scary. It wasn't funny. It didn't move fast enough. Yeah. It was an ineffective zombie movie.
I did.
Just make the thing first. Yeah. Make a fucking movie and then we'll worry about the social commentary. Yeah. Make a movie.
I did like and didn't mind the concept of polar fracking. So I want to be clear.
Well, it's very timely. It's very.
It wasn't just like, oh, fracking caused zombies. It was literally polar fracking for oil on the north and south poles of the earth which destroyed the polarity of the planet.
Destroys the polarity. It's just insane.
And they show this little diagram at one point of the planet with the north and south pole, and then they just show like all of these arrows pointing all over the north and all over the south, and it just says fracking, 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 fracking.
Right.
And then the whole planet starts twisting in a different way.
Yes.
See, here's the thing, though. I'm sure like a lot of this movie is very funny to Jim Jarmusch.
Yes.
And a lot of it makes sense to Jim Jarmusch. But like, I don't know. This is the interesting thing that I would think a lot of artists would worry about, it, where it's like they're trying to make something for people to see. But you're worried that like if you're doing a comedy like this, that your sense of humor is only going to appeal to someone who is you or exactly like you. Because this is... Dude, about as niche as it gets. Like, it's one of those movies where it's like, okay, I feel like a joke is supposed to be happening here.
Yes.
But I didn't feel it at all. What the hell was that?
I didn't laugh.
No. Like, the fucking, like, Selena Gomez. By the way, Selena Gomez is in this movie.
Yes.
Where, like, Caleb, the Caleb guy, what the fuck is his name?
I just told you. Yeah. Caleb Landry something?
Caleb Landry, okay.
Is that what his name? I don't know.
He's, like, flirting with Selena Gomez, and she tells him her name. And then, like, glitter... flutters around her head.
Right. Yeah, like as soon as she introduces herself, she's like, I'm whatever. I don't remember her name. But yeah. It's supposed to be one of those moments where it's like, oh, you just met the girl, you know?
And
but
he
it's
makes,
like, why
and
is
he
this
makes
happening?
A reference to Romero, and she goes, your knowledge of film is very impressive. Very impressive.
Which is something no woman has ever said.
It's like,
certainly not Selena Gomez.
Selena, how many George Romero films have you watched?
Is any woman that's looked like Selena Gomez ever complimented you on your George Romero knowledge?
Many times.
Okay.
Many times. But I'm the exception, not the rule.
Right. Don't forget, he's been shaved by many women.
Many women. And they talk to me about George Romero every time they shave me.
But yeah,
this is a difficult
she's
movie.
Also
for
not,
me.
She's also not in the movie very long.
No.
No. Her casting is kind of a joke.
Yeah, what's she doing in this movie? She doesn't do anything. Nobody really does anything.
She gets her head chopped off.
Is literally the joke, haha, we got Selena Gomez in this movie. Like, is that the joke?
Yes, I think so.
That, like,
I know,
how is that
I,
a joke?
I think it's
what
for
is
the trailer.
The humor? You know what I mean? No, and she's fine. She's perfectly fine in this movie. She doesn't do anything. She's...
It's not like a Hitchcockian boom, here I am, then she goes away. Like, that's a joke to me. They use her. They have intentionality with her character.
And then they sort of just dispense of her off screen.
Yes.
Right.
That's why it's so bizarre to me.
No, I think that her casting is literally so Adam Driver can hold her severed head. I think that's
really
the whole thing. Yeah, I do.
That seems just like a giant waste of money.
It is.
No, I know, but like
it is. Yes, it's a giant waste of everything.
You're making a movie. You don't get
this. Goes back to, I think, this concept that some of these directors who are good at making low budget films, as soon as you give them a budget, they make a bad movie.
Yeah, I don't know what his budget was here. I don't know what his budget
was. It
was
like
15 million. I think it was like 15 million.
15 million.
That's okay. That's a decent amount.
No, but that's my point. Like, you don't start making a movie and spend money just to waste it. Like, you just don't do that. I don't care who you are.
And I think this might just be a case of, like, don't give this guy money.
No, but it's like if your argument is going to be like, it's just a joke, like, John Waters started making real movies for the intent of having like a pop culture recognition, and he succeeded. Mm. That guy, the guy who filmed a woman eating dog shit. Mm. It's like, I don't know. I find it very hard to believe that Jim Jarmusch did it just for the joke. If he's spending all this money.
Yeah, there is a comment, like a weird comment, where Adam Driver talks about his love of Mexicans and how, like, he can just, like, sense a Mexican.
They're my people.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
So, like, maybe that casting, like, Selena Gomez, is she of Mexican descent? I know she's got some Latina in her. I don't know.
It's the line, though. He's like, that girl's got some Mexican in her. Like, yeah. That's the line of
and
the movie.
Like, I don't know if, like, some of that was a Trump thing. I'm not really sure, like, what the purpose of that line was. It was just sort of like a creepy Adam Driver.
It's definitely a Trump era film.
Yes.
Man, dude, Trump did a lot of weird things to movies.
He destroyed them.
He really did.
He actually destroyed them.
Jesus, like, filmmakers did some bizarre shit.
No, like, filmmakers were just not equipped. They were just not ready for this.
No.
And every movie about Trumpism has been terrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, Defy Bloods, I think, does it well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Get Out does it well. But
I debate whether or not I don't really consider Get Out a Trump era film, strangely.
It's actually more Obama, late Obama, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's more like Obama liberalism.
Is there a good Trump era film? I mean, Defy Bloods, but, like, there's got to be another one, right?
But again, Defy Bloods works because it is just a Vietnam movie.
Yeah.
Okay, and she sprinkled the Trump
stuff
on top of
it. I did confirm she is Mexican.
Okay, thank you.
Her father is of Mexican descent.
So maybe it's just we're going to cast a high-profile Mexican. But yeah.
Like, what's the joke, though?
I don't know. I don't know if Jim Jarmusch has this figured
like,
out.
Like, haha, Trump hates Mexicans? Like, what's the joke? I don't get it.
The whole movie is about our indifference towards evil.
Yes.
Right. And in this case, like, you know, Trumpism is one of the many evils that we've, like, ignored. Like, so Buscemi sitting in the diner and nobody acknowledges the Keep America White Again hat. You know, the fact that the police don't respond when the town has been overrun by zombies. The IndieWire's David Ehrlich, who's a critic that I read quite often, wrote this, and I thought it was pretty succinct. When hell is full and the dead will walk the earth, and when the earth is fucked, the living will do whatever they can to sleepwalk through the nightmare.
Oh.
So, like, you know, essentially, they're just rolling with the punches, man. And our indifference towards chaos and the fact that we just continually roll with the punches of society,
yep,
is eventually going to lead to our destruction. And I guess fracking is another one of those things.
Okay.
And fracking bad, yeah. And fracking
but like,
bad.
Okay, fine. If it's there, it's there. And cool. If you want to look for it, you can find it. When Tom Waits monologues at the end of this movie about how consumers are too busy worrying about their cell phones to like acknowledge the evil of the world, that they've, what is it? They've traded their souls for material things. I think that's like the exact line.
Yeah. Okay. What the fuck's he doing? He's living in the woods. Is he fighting the man?
I'm sorry.
Are you like standing up to anybody? You're just living in the woods like a hobo. Shut the fuck up.
Hermit Bob.
You don't get to be Bob, yeah. Hermit Bob does not get to be the fucking moral compass of this world. Okay.
Right.
Like,
I love Tom Waits, though.
I do, man.
I love him when he's digging for gold, getting shot in the back.
It's so good in that movie.
You measly skank shot me in the back. Make me do all the work.
Have you seen Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
Oh, my God.
Mm-mm.
That is one of the...
I think I started it. I don't think I finished it.
Such a great... That is probably the best vignette in that entire movie. It's beautiful.
I think so. Man, that movie has really grown with age for me. I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, me too.
Like, there are flashes of absolute brilliance in that movie. Even the one with the Zoe Kazan is great.
Oh, I've always loved that one.
That one's fantastic.
That's it could be my favorite.
That shootout at the end of that, like the way they choreograph that shootout.
It is tense, man.
It's great.
It's so tragic. Oh, it's great.
Okay. Nick, do you want to like maybe gloss over the plot here? Although we've touched on a lot of it, I'm sure.
I mean, Is there really much more to say than the dead start rising in a small town in the middle of nowhere?
Because of fracking.
Because of polar fracking.
Lunar radiation where the moon goes full color out of space and just like, like, what was that?
long story short, though, because of like, you know, U.S. Politicians and industry, the environment has changed so much that now zombies are a thing.
Yes.
So that's the next next evolution
logical
of climate
step.
Change.
Yes, yes. Zombies. I'm thinking
the earth warms and the dead rise.
I'm thinking zombies.
I'm thinking zombies.
Ghouls.
Outer space.
But yeah, so zombies start rising in this town and some people seem to be aware and some don't, and they fight back and others die. I mean, there's really not much of a plot here other than we follow Adam Driver and Bill Murray, the cops, and what's her name again?
Chloe Sevigny.
Chloe Sevigny. I try to keep these notes open so I can remember people's names. We also follow Tilda Swinton, who's really the only person I want to talk about right now. But and she apparently is new to town, bought the funeral home and is running the funeral home. And she also converted part of it into her own private Japanese dojo where she prays to Buddha and practices with her samurai sword every day. But by the way, she's Scottish.
Okay. Can I just say this?
Yes.
It was this beautiful but also kind of horrible realization about an actor, and I had to come to terms with it now because I've always like kind of like Tilda Swinton enough. Like, I guess I don't dislike her, but I was watching this.
She is hard to figure out though, man.
I was watching this and Tilda Swinton is playing a faux Japanese Scottish samurai sword wielding mortician alien. And I saw her in the movie and I said, ah, Tilda Swinton, you're playing the same character again.
Same role.
Is that same role again and again.
You gotta stop typecasting Tilda Swinton as a samurai sword wielding Scottish alien from another planet. You just gotta stop. Time to show some more range, Tilda.
You're not even wrong.
Dead on.
Yep.
Dead on.
Yep.
It's too much, man. She needs to stop.
Yes.
She needs to do less.
She's the only person who I just want to be like, can you just play normal?
Yes,
do a straight
exactly.
role. Just Please. Do drama. Just do a dramatic role.
I can't think of many roles where she played. I guess The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
We need to talk about Kevin.
Yeah, but that's not like normal. I mean, she's a wreck in that.
She's
movie.
A person, though.
Yeah, I guess.
She's a person living in the real world.
Who raised a psychopath.
Yeah.
So I don't know. No, I mean, for me, like, honestly, Curious Case of Benjamin Button's the only thing that comes to mind. Like, she's just totally normal. I guess that's it.
I mean, part of it is the directors that she works with.
It's also her look. And I've said this before, but I'm sorry, but it really is her look.
No, she looks like an alien, and I'm sorry. I apologize to Taylor.
But she clearly leans into this.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. She's very aware of this.
Like, she just, this is, I feel like she can't stand not being the craziest person on screen.
She loves working with the Coens. She loves working with Wes Anderson. She loves working with Bong Joon-ho. She loves working with Jim Jarmusch. These are not people that will cast her as a normal person, because most of those people don't work with normal people as characters.
Well, they're not normal people. The people she's worked with are not normal people.
And look, if you want to embrace that, I mean, yeah, those are some of the great directors that have ever lived. And you should work with them when given the opportunity. But just, you got to know what you're getting into there, man. You're probably going to have like a weird hairstyle and some funky looking glasses.
Look, I love her with Bong Joon-ho every time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Wes Anderson is not in that list.
I was going to say, did you just say Wes Anderson? No. One of the great directors that ever lived? Nico.
No.
You come along
three, definitely.
Oh, okay.
But she's in Snowpiercer, right?
Mm-hmm. She's
and she's fantastic in Okja.
Yep.
She's very distinctly remember her from Okja. Love it.
She plays two roles in Okja.
I know. She's great. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, she is. She is
two
great. Yeah.
Scottish Japanese sword wielding aliens in Okja. Two separate.
Do you like her, though? Well, do you like her? Are you drawn to her characters?
I feel like when she's cast, it's not like, oh, here's Tilda Swinton playing a character. It's just, oh, there's the Tilda Swinton character in this movie. And I know exactly what she's going to be. And like, does this movie need the Tilda Swinton character?
Right. Doctor Strange was another weird one.
Oh, God, that's right. Oh, my God.
Don't like her there.
That's right.
And that was tough because it was like there was a whitewashing controversy, too. Yeah. And like.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
I think that was the moment where I sort of went over the cliff with Tilda Swinton. Yeah. Like, I just felt like that was enough. Doctor Strange.
She didn't need to be there. Not everybody needs to be in the MCU.
No.
I think that's a...
Yeah, I kind of just want Tilda Swinton to make like a British, like palace intrigue drama. You know what I mean? Like, if she just makes a Downton Abbey movie, I'm cool with it. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm usually bored by those types of movies, but we need a palate cleanser here.
I would challenge her to do a TV show drama.
Yes.
Challenge her to do it, yeah.
Yeah, cop show on HBO.
If she's on a show, she has to develop. You can't just be the same character for three seasons.
Okay, I suppose there's Michael Clayton.
She's great in Michael Clayton.
Really good in
And
Michael.
She's phenomenal in that movie.
And she's...
Yes! She needs to do that again.
Yeah, fairly... I mean, she's kind of the villain of the movie, but like fairly normal normal relative to this shit.
Yes.
And I think we can all agree, though, that none of us are saying she's a bad actress or doesn't have range.
I think she's a wonderful
actress.
She's
phenomenal. Yeah. She's not utilizing it enough, is it what we're saying?
Yeah. Or she's utilizing... No, I think what I'm saying is she's utilizing her talents too much.
I think she's leaning on a crutch of, if I... pick a crazy character.
Right.
I feel like it's easier to act crazy.
Yes.
Maybe.
I actually think it's easier.
Because now I think about it, it's like because I kept referencing Curious Case of Benjamin Button, but like there's a part of me that's like she was probably drawn to that because of the premise of the movie.
Sure.
More so than the character. And I actually think she's wonderful in that. I'm actually quite drawn to her because of how sweet and dramatic she is in that moment. Mm. But like the first time I ever saw her was Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe.
Right.
Fucking Chronicles of Narnia. She's playing the witch.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Holy shit. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But like Tom Hanks, right? Okay. Weird turn. But Tom Hanks is not a phenomenal actor because he plays crazy characters. He's a phenomenal actor because he can play like really normal characters really well.
He is the best at it.
Right.
It's him and Jimmy Stewart are the two greatest normal guy actors that have ever lived.
Yeah. I feel like it's very easy to be the craziest person in the room. And if
it can be a clutch.
Look at the Johnny Depp effect, right? Like,
certainly.
If you're just the most eccentric person in the room in every movie, you can be like, oh, wow, he's so eccentric and quirky, but like, is he really talented? I don't know.
And I'll tell you who figured this out. Robin Williams. Because Robin Williams was a guy that could have played Mork for 30 years. And they would have cast him as like the weird sideshow John Candy guy that comes in and like gives you 5 minutes of like really intense comedy, just gives you a spark. And he decided to diversify a little bit, to do some dramatic stuff, to play the lead, to go dark, to go light.
And he was good.
He was, he was incredible.
But, that's the thing.
I mean, yeah, that guy could have done silly Disney movies. Christopher Lloyd, to a certain extent, did this. I think like where Lloyd went wrong, Robin went right.
Sure.
You know, Christopher Lloyd should have made the transition to drama way sooner than he did. And by the time he did, it was too late. It can be a crutch. You're right. Sometimes being the loudest guy in the room is a crutch. And being quiet is sometimes the challenge. It's interesting. Actors certainly don't think about it that way though. And no. That's often the problem.
I can't express enough how impressed I am when I can be deeply compelled by an actor when they say nothing in a scene just by looks. Oh God, I love that.
Like Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. Honestly, Vince Vaughn in Attack or Brawl and Soulbuck 99. That's a great example for me. Just be quiet and it's very compelling.
Okay. What else happened in this movie here? So yes, Swinton is, it's revealed that she's an alien. I think again, the joke is Tilda Swinton looks and behaves like an alien.
Dude, it's one of the most surprised I've ever been in a movie. Like I was just mouth agape. I couldn't believe the movie went in this direction.
Right.
Cause there's just no context for it at all. Mm. Aside from the fact that she's weird and that's it. It's just, there is a spaceship now in this movie. Like if you had pitched this movie to me or told me anything about it, I would never in a million years have guessed that there were going to be aliens in like the last 3 minutes of the movie.
Mm. I do think like there is something to, you think someone's going to save the day. You think like this Deus Ex Machina is
going
to appear and bring you to safe haven. But no,
it's definitely an effective joke.
Sure.
But for many different reasons that I wasn't expecting, for basically what you said, part of the absurdity of like, what is this movie? And also for, you know, like, oh, okay, I guess she's not going to help us out.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. You think she's the hero. Turns out, no, she's going back to Z or Xenon or whatever.
Krypton. She's going back to Krypton.
Sure. what else did I want to say here? Yeah, again, there were some Lynchian winks. I wouldn't call it a Lynchian movie.
I got some Twin Peaks vibes every once in a while.
Well, I think some of that was like very intentional. Like when Iggy Pop descends on that diner and starts yelling about coffee. I mean, that is just, that's Twin Peaks. That's Cooper right there.
I really liked that scene, by the way, too, where the two zombies, the first time we actually see the zombies and we find out, oh, they're not just completely, you know, just mindless. They still remember certain things. And the fact that these two walk in here because they want coffee to me is fucking hilarious. I really enjoyed that.
Another interesting idea, though, that zombies have personality, that they're characters.
That's not new, though.
I know it's not.
They've done that before. The Return of the Living Dead is all that.
Right.
And in Day of the Dead, George Romero, they it's one of the first introductions to that idea that zombies can remember their past lives. And it's really oddly kind of touching in that one in certain scenes. But I like that scene too. I guess for all the zombie action in this movie, that's one of the ones that actually work. Cause I like what Nico was saying, as a zombie film, most of the zombie stuff is sort of whatever. Although I have to admit there's a scene where Caleb Landry Jones and Danny Glover are holding up in a store and they're trying to keep the zombies out, and their performances here just really cracked me up. This is for me, it maybe it was only funny to me, but it was just the funniest thing where they're boarding the place up and then they didn't realize there was a back door and all the zombies pour it, and then they just turn around and they don't do anything. They're just like, ah, damn, we really should have boarded that up. As the zombies are coming towards them, they have guns around them. They're not doing a fucking thing. And they're like, shit, well, I guess we're goners. And then they get eaten.
I would have liked just like, again, a movie with just them two for a while too.
Yeah.
They were really funny. They had great chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were good.
Rosie Perez plays a character named Posey Juarez.
I did not catch that.
I noticed that too,
Just want to put that out there.
Oh, God.
What a gag.
That's just really next level comedy right there.
What about
Adam Driver drives a smart car?
I'd like to point this out. There's only one cop car in this movie.
Yeah.
There's the one cop car, then they have to get their own cars. Sorry,
I really love the three cops, right? So Bill Murray has the cop car. Adam Driver has the smart car, a red smart car, and then, which again, I don't have my tab open, Chloe Sevigny has a Prius.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very funny to me.
I wonder where the dealerships are in this town. Well,
It was hilarious watching Adam Driver driving, like speeding into the crime scene in a red smart car.
Just, that's a good little moment.
And he's like a big fucking dude.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
That is the thing about Adam Driver is he is ridiculously imposing. Mm-hmm. Like he's really fucking tall and he has like a tall face too. Like his just whole essence is tall.
Yes.
Which is another reason why I find this guy just like a remarkable actor. Like there have not been enough guys that look like that, that are actually that compelling. Stars.
Yeah.
You know,
he shouldn't be a movie star.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. That guy's so good. Like
he should be a professional wrestler, not like a dramatic actor.
It's like when they said like, oh, the handsome cop, I'm like, no, that's the charm of Adam Driver is that he's ugly as fuck. but somehow he works. No,
everybody thinks he's handsome, though.
I know.
It's crazy. Like,
guys, what are you talking about?
Like, no. Let's all be clear. He is not traditionally handsome by any means.
I'll give him that. Yeah, not traditional. I guess.
When he's filming Star Wars with his shirt off, he looks fucking crazy.
Okay, all right.
He doesn't even look like buff. He looks crazy.
He's a weird looking.
He looks inflated, like somebody filled him with air.
He's funny looking.
He's funny looking.
Just kind of funny looking. Yeah. I don't know.
Adam Driver, best working actor right now.
Yes.
I gave him his prime.
Top five.
When we were doing our end of the decade list, I gave him that award. Yeah. Actor of the decade.
But do you think like right now, just performance not seen, you would say he's the best actor working? Like an upcoming movie, you know, if it's like Hardy and Gosling and Leo.
Oh my God.
Chalamet.
Mads Mikkelsen, Chalamet.
It's a crazy cast.
Like give them all the same role. Like who's delivering best performance with them?
A bigger question for Leo DiCaprio. Do you think Is he still at the same caliber?
I think he's still in his prime. I think he has a long prime. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think he's still getting the first
Haven't seen his performance get worse or anything, but I'm just like, I'm wondering how long this.
He's still the first guy you call. Right?
I will say for Leo, though, his performances have a samey quality to them now. Like even his better performance.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, man, is something else.
Honestly, though, if you were to ask me if who would do it better, him or Adam Driver, I would probably say Adam Driver.
You'd say Driver's better in that role?
Probably.
Wow.
I'm much more... put it this way.
By the way, my answer would be Driver, I think.
I've always been more compelled by someone like Adam Driver. I like Leo, but I've never, like, loved Leo.
I think Leo's doing his best work now, though.
Possibly. I mean, to give him credit, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is one of his best roles, but that's also just maybe the best character Tarantino's ever written.
Yes.
So give it to anybody, they're probably going to do good. I'm just generally more compelled by Adam Driver than Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, I think he's number one. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy how quickly he rose up those ranks too, as like the guy from Girls. And then
that's right.
He was, you know, okay villain in that first Star Wars movie.
It was Star Wars put him on the map.
Yes.
That's where
that second Star Wars movie was the one where we're like, oh, shit, this guy is like.
Well, but I'm not even sure looking at any of his Star Wars performances, you're really getting like the best of him. It's just what gave him the name recognition for people to go see Marriage Story.
I was
going to
say,
you know what I mean?
The second Star Wars didn't do that. To me, it gave him meme potential. That's
right.
What it was.
I think the last act of Star Wars is he's on another level, man.
The Last Jedi?
In The Last Jedi, yes. The final act of The Last Jedi.
He's very good. I think the movie that gave him, like I don't know, everyone's approval was Marriage Story.
Marriage Story is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen in my life. Just
and again, the guy looks like he should be like in the ring with Stone Cold Steve Austin cracking beers, not like doing this fucking Marriage Story with ScarJo.
I will never forget the first time I saw him in a movie. I'm like, who the hell is this? And it was Inside Llewyn Davis.
Every time I see Adam Driver in like movies before Star Wars, like every time I just come across him, I'm always like, holy shit.
But he's really good in Francis Ha. Like,
good
really
in
good in Francis Ha.
You two have no excuses.
Yeah.
Tonight you need to watch Patterson. Oh. You need to do it.
I got
to
watch
I was
going to
watch
The
Host.
Man. The Host?
Yeah.
Well, the Bong Joon-ho film?
Yeah, I was going to watch some Bong Joon-ho. You're going to make me watch...
Is Swinton in that one? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, she's not.
No, she's not.
That was before he got in touch with America, I think.
before you, well, the guy who plays Herschel from The Walking Dead is in that. So.
Oh. Oh, yeah, he is the first act of that.
Just pour it all down the drain.
What else did I want to say about this fucking movie?
Tilda Swinton, I don't think we talked about this. There's this great scene where she's in the funeral home putting makeup on the dead bodies.
Oh, God.
And she's just dressing them up like clowns. She's got gorgeous. Like bright blue eyeliner, green like on the cheeks and red lipstick. And
it's so ridiculous.
It's just so funny. This crazy alien lady, like, I have to make them look pretty. Just throw colors on their face.
They look like fucking divine or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's terrible.
And then they keep opening their eyes. And every time there's a little like ding.
Yeah, that's another moment, though, where it's like that type of comedy is totally different from the comedy in the last scene, you know?
Well, and here's the thing. I think that it's just like the thing with Selena Gomez earlier. If they were doing this consistently throughout the entire movie, I think I could have gotten on board.
Me too.
Like, really, like every scene you make an effort to throw in sound effects. Like, it would be kind of obnoxious. The cost of your sound design would be probably quite expensive just to get this shit done. But, like, I feel like that's what it would have taken to make this work.
I agree.
Yeah, I just feel like Jarmusch bit off a little more than he could chew here. And I hate to say that it kind of felt doomed to fail at the top. I don't think it's a horrible movie. I don't think it's a catastrophic failure. I don't think this is going to tarnish Jim Jarmusch's legacy by any stretch of the imagination.
Some people really like this movie.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm sure all of these actors will work with him again because clearly they love working with him. No. You know, Bill Murray even says in the movie Breaking the Fourth Wall that he's done so much for this guy. And by the way, in that scene, are they speaking as the characters? Or are they speaking as Bill Murray and Adam Driver?
I think at that point, there is no difference between the character and the actor.
Say. Okay.
They literally call him Jim.
Jim gave me the script.
Adam Driver, Jim gave me the script. He didn't give me the full script. He only gave us our scenes.
For everything I did for that guy.
And a lot of you don't even know about.
Yeah, I was going to say. Hold on. It's just not a good zombie movie. That's all.
But it's a puzzling movie, though.
Yeah,
it's got some moments, but it's like, why did you make this? Who spent $15 million on this?
That's a good question.
That's the biggest thing. It's like when I think about how much good can be done with $15 million, I really just
think about how many McDonald's French fries you could buy with $15 million.
You could feed me for a lifetime.
That's true.
Oh, there was one great scene too with Buscemi, where he goes outside. And he's looking for his dog, and his dog runs off. And then he looks in the field and he goes, "Holy shit, who stole my fucking cows?" And all his cows are gone.
What happened to my chickens?
Where are my chickens? That cracked me up. I don't know. Just I could see like that being a gif, just like Steve Buscemi. Holy shit, where are my fucking cows?
It's got its moments. It's like you said, it's not devoid of merit or anything, but I can't pin this one down. Yeah. You know,
we're going to be thinking about this one a while. It's possible that I look back on it 3 years from now and I like love it.
No, like I said, though, there is somewhat of a cult fandom surrounding this movie. I've seen it, which is cool. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised. It feels like that type of movie. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's also just because I'm a big fan of zombie movies in general. You know, like this is just because you're absolutely right. This is a kind of a terrible zombie movie.
Right. And it's mournful and melancholic and also like kind of funny at times.
Yeah, but doesn't earn any of that stuff.
Right. Right. Which I love when like Jim Jarmusch makes mournful, melancholic movies about a poet, about like a free verse poet,
sure.
Which is what Patterson is. That fucking rules, man. Like that tone works throughout. We're here.
I guess at this point, like the template is Shaun of the Dead, and why try to like, that's it.
There you go.
That is it.
There you go.
So
except Shaun of the Dead is like one of the best comedies ever made.
Yes. It's amazing. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Shaun of the Dead like changed people's lives. Yes. Not joking. There are people who watch that movie and walk away different.
The fact that people go to Comic-Con and wear trousers, a white shirt and a red tie, and everyone knows what that is.
Right.
It's like, okay.
That's another movie that I think is understated a lot. Like, people,
it's a great, it's one of my favorites, dude. That movie's great.
So good.
All right, let's play a game.
Yeah.
How many Drew Carey?
That was an
trying to change it up, man.
Perfecting never the same craft, twice. You
know? Yeah. Never the same twice.
Unlike Tilda Swinton's performances. Have we ever done Bill Murray?
We must have, right?
I don't know.
Check the list.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember ever doing a Bill Murray movie, though, because the guy mostly makes like fucking good movies, like just unimpeachably good movies.
Hmm. Except for Ghostbusters.
That's true. Not a good one.
Oh my God.
But the rest are just...
We did Bill Murray.
When?
The Velocipastor.
What?
Don't know. I don't know.
But was it just random? Like, no, it's in the movie. Spin the wheel. Bill Murray.
Yeah, we did Bill Murray before. That's all I can tell you.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, so we got Driver, you got Swinton, you got RZA, you got Danny Glover, Selena Gomez.
Jim Jarmusch.
Selena Gomez might be a good one.
Nah.
Nick, pick. I don't care. Whatever you want to do.
I'm just double checking that we haven't done like Adam Driver or something too. Okay, Selena Gomez might be fine.
Whatever you're feeling. I'm cool with it.
Oh, there's no way we've done Selena.
I'm seeing Joey Chestnut on our list. Which, by the way, I was at Jungle Jim's the other day, the famous grocery store in Cincinnati. And in the hot sauce section, apparently Joey Chestnut sells his own hot dog mustard and ketchup.
Oh,
he has his own ketchup brand and his own mustard brand.
Wow.
Let's do Selena. She's worth a lot.
Maybe.
Probably.
What has she done lately?
Music.
I guess just music.
Yeah?
Music, man.
Has she had a hit in 6 years?
You make a lot more for music than you do for movies, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, if you're successful.
Why wouldn't she say she's unsuccessful, man? It's Selena Gomez.
I mean, she's had top hits. She's been in the top 10 a few times, I'm sure.
Lose You to Love Me is a Selena Gomez song.
She dated Joe Jonas, right? Or Nick Jonas, or one of the Jonases?
She dated the Biebs.
She dated
years
the Biebs?
Ago. Years ago, yeah.
So she's dated a Jonas, she's dated a Biebs.
Has she dated a Jonas?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Nick Jonas.
Yeah, so I think she's, I would say don't underestimate her.
No, she's clearly very famous because she's attractive and young and was on the Disney Channel.
Right. She had the Disney money early on.
I'm just saying, like, what lately? I'm saying, what lately? I don't know.
Well,
she made some bad fucking movies with, like, didn't she make a movie with, like, John Cena or something? Like an action movie with John Cena.
Oh, God. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't remember what that was.
Maybe John Cena gets paid a lot, too.
True.
Even to make bad movies.
She does like a cooking show, I think, too, on like Apple or something. Hmm. On Apple TV. It's like Cooking with Selena.
That's got to be a big money gig.
I think, honestly, that's what she's known for now. She's like an Instagram influencer that like does cooking videos.
What the hell happened to her?
I mean, how the mighty have fallen, right?
All
right,
well.
Ever since Wizards of Waverly Place.
Let's go for it. Drew Carey's worth $190 million.
I'll say $60 million for Selena.
So three Selenas.
Yes.
Interesting.
1-1.
One to one.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep.
Big. Okay. I'm going to put her at $125 million. So that will be 1.5 Selenas.
That is a good guess.
1.5 Selenas.
I definitely think she's worth more than.
I think I'm going a little high here, Adam. I think you went really high, but.
You think so?
Yeah, but.
I mean,
we'll see.
I don't know anything about music.
Repeat the guesses one more time. So, I said 60. You said what?
125 to 190.
1-1. So
190. Okay. I'm rejecting the premise that Selena Gomez is a pop star. Like, I just, like, where's the evidence, man? Show me the hits. Like, I know she was supposed to be a pop star.
Maybe we're wrong. I don't know. Let's see what happens.
Baila Conmigo. And that's got 200 million streams. She's got 40 million fucking Spotify listeners a month. That's pretty damn good. I know this song. This song I've heard before. You ever heard this song?
I don't know.
So let me just put this out there too. It seems like she has quite a few songs that are in Spanish, or at least partly in Spanish, right? especially
maybe it's that.
2021. I see Dame Loto. I see De
Taki.
In her 2021 album Revelacion. Okay, so I mean, don't underestimate the Spanish speaking countries as well here. Like, remember Despacito fucking shot up number one viewed video of all time. Yeah, I remember that song. That's not that old.
The actual net worth of Selena Gomez, $75 million. That means I just won this week's edition of...
Still pretty high.
How many Drew Carey's?
I was thinking she was going to be closer to 100.
Yeah.
But I like to not box in so much. I like to keep it interesting. So
yeah,
but
yeah, I mean, we're in an era now where people are just famous for being famous.
Mm-hmm. And oh yeah,
you gotta take that into consideration. You know, you do the math of like,
also,
okay, maybe you made $30 million for your Marvel movies, and you made this much for the royalties of this show.
I just think celebrity means less and less in these in these coming years.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Like, fame does not equal money.
Yeah, correct.
You know, right. So
but sometimes it does. Like in the case of Selena Gomez, sure. I feel like it's just fame that equals money.
Yeah.
Good for her, man. Good for her.
She's fine. She's not like offensive as an actress, and her music's okay,
and she's very attractive.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you know, there's nothing like she's much more palatable than like Demi Lovato.
Well,
you know what I mean,
Demi Lovato,
or
oh god, I mean,
who's another example of
as
Disney,
a person or as an artist?
No, like a Disney girl who became like a musical artist, like
because I really
Miley
like
Cyrus,
Demi
I guess.
Lovato, but
I think Selena Gomez is about as palatable. A Disney musician,
Hilary Duff.
Well, she doesn't do anything anymore. She retired.
You know what she's doing? The How I Met Your Mother spinoff, How I Met Your Father. For Hulu. Yeah.
I did hear she's trying to kind of make a comeback, right?
By the way, that was a show that was supposed to star Greta Gerwig. Like before Greta Gerwig was in Frances Ha, like she shot a pilot. Like the pilot is available online if you look for it. She was going to be the head writer and star of How I Met Your Father. And instead she went on to, of course, have this great indie filmmaking career. But
that's right.
She was almost lost to the network TV machine. That's how close it came.
Damn.
They didn't end up picking up that pilot.
I feel like Hilary Duff and what's his name? Malcolm in the Middle.
Frankie Muniz.
I feel like they both did they did that spy movie like Secret Agent Cody Banks
they
or whatever.
Did. That's right.
And then they both disappeared.
They have a similar trajectory
after that movie.
Right. Oh wow.
They both were just like, we're done. Right. We're gonna retire now.
Can't do it anymore.
All right. That's gonna do it for this pod. Adam and I are still talking zombie movies later this week. We're going to talk about the five best ones of all time.
Yeah, haven't had enough.
I don't think our list is comprised of the five best ones, if I'm being honest. Well, I think it's short.
Okay.
You know, you could definitely add a few more, but, you know, I guess these ones are fine.
I guess these ones are fine.
I don't know.
We can change the list if you'd like.
What a great plug for the episode.
I know.
I guess these ones are
You're the
five.
One. You've decided them.
I mean, my list includes Return of the Living Dead.
Because we didn't include Return of the Living Dead, it's no longer a great list?
It's legitimately one of the great zombie movies. And I don't know.
We talked about it already.
Yeah, I know.
You can change the list. It's your list.
We also did Night of the Living Dead, but you know.
You can also honorable mention...
I can't believe what like a soft sell that was for your own idea. No wonder you can't get a movie sold.
Me?
Could you imagine this guy in a pitch meeting? I mean, it's all right. It's not my best work ever, but like...
It's definitely not my best work.
Maybe you can throw half a million towards
suitable.
It.
It's suitable.
It's suitable. That's my pitch. It's suitable.
God.
It'll do something.
Man, oh man. This guy. Do not go on Shark Tank. That's all I'm saying.
Fuck that.
Do not bring Adam on with you on Shark Tank. Okay. So anyway, listen to Movie Hall of Fame. We're doing the zombie film podcast. And that's it. Go to the website, tmt.media or toomanythoughtsmedia.com. Watch my YouTube videos. I just posted one this morning, as a matter of fact. Go check that one out. I broke down the Warner Brothers Discovery Inc. merger.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
I tried my best to keep it engaging. I created a parody song Of the film Stanky Leg.
I did watch that this morning.
Called John Stanky Leg. Yeah. Because John Stanky, of course, is the CEO of AT&T.
I saw that.
That apology was very warranted.
Enjoy.
What? I'll throw a plug out there. One of our fellow podcast hosts, Katie, from Fantasy Book of the Month and Nostalgia Plus, she just opened up a bookstore online.
Ooh, so, oh, wow.
Cool. If you're interested in books, she's literally got, it's not just fantasy, it's like the whole gamut. Everything you could think of. She's got categories on there that I didn't know were categories.
Like what?
Like, we got, where is the one I'm looking for? Witches. Witchcraft. Witchcraft is one of them. Set. I don't even know what that means. there's so much stuff on here.
What's the name of the site?
It's Griffin's Roost, BT.com. Griffin's Roost Books and Treasures.
So Griffin's Roost.
Griffin, that's G-R-I-F-F-I-N. So Griffin's Roost, BT.com. Check that out if you are interested in any books. They're actually very affordable, too. They're like not like crazy markups.
Are these used books?
A lot of them are used. Some of them are, she actually has a deal with like a wholesaler. So, cool. But yeah.
Good for her.
So if you're interested in books and you want to support somebody,
we got to work on this URL, Katie.
I'm sorry.
It's a very nice site. I think the selection here is quite incredible, actually. Wow. Look at this.
It's actually like really robust, right?
Yeah. And they're very modestly priced. A lot of these things, some of them are under $5. So this is great. I love it.
So if you're looking for books, you know, maybe look here first.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Help Katie out. Does she have I'll put a link to that in the description here.
Does she have all the Dune books? Because I still have more than I need to get.
I
hope she does.
I bet you she does have at least one of them.
Ooh.
She has Dune.
All right. There we go.
So all the links for that are on the website. So just go there, tmt.media. Every week or so, I'm doing these cultured videos, and they've been going well. Oh, here's another thing. Help us push over 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
We're 963 right YouTube subscribers. We just need 40 more. That's it.
Here's the deal, guys. This is really important. When you hit 1,000, you can change your YouTube URL.
Right.
That's a big deal.
And you can also get a little bit of that sweet cash. Mm. You know what I mean? You can also back up the dump truck full of Benjamins.
We so desperately need. We're currently doing this in an alleyway.
Yeah. Right. So if you want ads on your videos, subscribe now.
Good point. Yeah, no, just get us to 1,000. We're right there. I just feel like we're dying at the finish line here, man. We're just losing steam after that 21-mile marker. You know? What do they call that wall in marathon running, Nick?
The wall. Okay. They call it the wall.
Oh, my God.
Get us over 1,000. Tell your friends, whatever you got to do. You can find the link on the website and subscribe.
Commit tax fraud, whatever you got to do.
Whatever you got to do, man. Create 1,000 Google accounts and just subscribe to the channel. Right. Love you. Until next time, you all have been so very, very naughty.
Naughty.